Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today as I have kind of a special and unique episode of the podcast for you today. The other month, I was contacted by someone who was looking to have an integration call with me, which is one of the services that I offer, and he made the suggestion that we record the integration call and then we make it available as an episode here on the podcast. And I thought that was an interesting idea, so we went ahead and did it. And that's what I'm bringing to you today. So we'll be getting to that in just a minute. But first, let's get through a couple announcements. Great, big, joyous thank you to Juan, who made a very generous contribution in support of the Entheogenic Evolution podcast over this past week. And also, welcome to USNT Church, which has signed up as a new patron over at my Patreon page. These are two different ways that you can support the podcast, is by making a PayPal donation, such as Juan, or joining up as a patron over at my Patreon page and getting access to everything that's available over there, where I have old episodes of the podcast, for example, and also gifts and bonuses that come to you, the supporter, and there's no commitment that you can be there for as long as you want, or be there for as short as you want. And of course, if you join the top tiers of my Patreon page, which of course is patreon.com/MartinWBall, then you can get either a 30 or 60 minute consultation call, or just check in with me once a month if that's something that you're interested in. That's something that a lot of people who want ongoing support like to choose. And speaking of non-dual entheogenic integration and support, of course, my website for that is exactly that, nondualentheogenicintegration.com. I'm available for 30, 60, and 90-minute calls. And since that's what we're talking about today here in the podcast, I thought I would just start off by sharing with you, the listening audience, just some of the feedback that I've gotten from my clients recently. So I'm just going to read through a couple things that my clients have said back to me. Martin's guidance and support, along with his books, were integral to my successful approach in using psychedelics for healing. Having someone experienced in these matters prevented me from becoming inflated or deluded in my interpretation of these deeply meaningful experiences. I highly recommend seeking a guide when approaching these substances, and Martin is the one I would most strongly recommend. Thank you. The profound nature of my first 5-MeO-DMT led to a state of ontological awe. Martin's writings provided a beacon of clarity during this transformative period, but beyond the written word, it was our integration calls that truly stood out. His guidance was not just about understanding the experience itself, but more importantly, about navigating the aftermath and finding my footing in a world that felt both familiar and new. With his help, I was able to develop authentic ways to relate to my new state of being and integrate it into my daily life. Ah, that's another nice one. Post my 5-MeO experience, Martin's writings offered clarity, but our integration calls were transformative. He skillfully guided me to my own insights, helping me navigate the profound changes and integrate them into daily life. His unbiased, intuitive approach is one of a kind. My integration sessions with Martin Ball was absolutely effective. What makes Martin so effective is that he has the experience and the knowledge and the insight, and you can feel he cares. He immediately got to the heart of my situation, understand the issues, and gave me insights that led to transformation. I highly recommend Martin Ball for integration services. Let's see, here's another one. I've had several integration sessions with Martin and have appreciated his vast knowledge, support, and approach. He has the ability to understand the nuances of your trip and helps you look at what you went through from a perspective coming from one who has had their own deep experiences. The conversation is deep, flowing, sometimes light, sometimes serious. I've appreciated his perspective, and it's helped me understand the meaning of my trips on a deeper level. I'd highly recommend Martin to anyone looking for integration that comes from a place of integrity and experience. Martin was a guiding light in a time nothing made sense. I was so lost and unstable post-ceremony that talking with Martin felt like a sigh of relief and a hope when I needed it. So much has changed and improved since then. Martin's insight into my process is nothing short of remarkable. Having someone that has been through what I'm going through, or having accompanied other travelers of this experience, is invaluable. Martin has an almost uncanny ability to immediately zoom into the most important issues that I'm currently dealing with, and his down-to-earth approach paired with his voice of reason is a truly must-have tool in my tool belt. I appreciate him both as a human being and an integration coach and wish him nothing but the best. Well, thanks. The consultation exceeded my expectations. We were able to cover different aspects of the integration, and Martin was able to answer all of my questions in a timely manner. He was very efficient, wise, and helpful. Martin was a great person to talk to about my experiences. He's very knowledgeable and incredibly caring when talking to him. I recommend him to anyone. When I started to learn about psychedelics, it was like walking into a dark room with blind eyes. I had no source, but I had a feeling that there was a huge treasure box in this dark room. Martin, his books, podcasts, and of course having integration with him, connected everything together. He took me to a whole different level of experience with all psychedelics. His approach truly changed my view of psychedelics and definitely changed my life. I will always be thankful to him. I am deeply grateful to Martin for his warm welcome and essential assistance in the integration process. His approach allows the powerful experience with 5-MeO-DMT, which invites us to transcend the ego and reveal a sacred geography within ourselves, to be deeply understood and meaningfully assimilated. Thank you, Martin, for facilitating this path of reconnection and unity and for sharing your wisdom and compassion with those on this transformative journey. I set up an integration session with Martin after going through an extraordinarily difficult and painful trip on DMT in hopes of making sense of what I experienced. It was quite refreshing to have someone listen so attentively, genuinely, and without inserting any spiritual fluff or ideologies around what the experience could mean. He has a very unique, non-dualistic approach towards the psychedelic experience itself and the integration process, which for me resonated at a very deep level. Everything became crystal clear for me during our session. It was extremely obvious where I was creating narratives around my trip and how I was resisting the energy of my experience. Martin emphasizes full presence and allowance of energy. I felt 10 times lighter after 1 hour with him, ready to embrace the energy of my next experience with an open heart, truly. Martin and I worked together for 9 months, and he was influential in my healing and integration journey as both a facilitator and a student. He gave me tools to help me embody the information I was receiving in my journeys, to be present and understood much deeper what God actually is. He supported me as a facilitator and offered insight and reflection so I could guide my clients through their journeys under the lens of non-dualism. He helped me understand my ego, and through that understanding, I was able to understand when my clients were in their egos. He helped me to communicate in a clear way and has always cheered me on as I peeled off more layers of outdated beliefs, fears, and programming to come into a more authentic version of myself. Integration is key to doing this kind of healing work. And to be supported by Martin was such a gift. So I think that's enough. I've got a few more of these that came in from some of my clients, which I really appreciate all you guys sending those in to me. And that just gives you an idea of some of the feedback that people want to say in support of their integration calls with me. And just know that I'm always here to help, that I take great pleasure, actually, in getting the opportunity to speak with people from around the world every week. I mean, my clientele is extremely diverse, coming from every different kind of background and social situation and upbringing and religious or spiritual beliefs or training or anything like that. I also work with therapists. I work with doctors. I work with people who are providing medicine experiences to help give feedback and reflection on their own practices. So it's very diverse. And if you are out there and looking for some reflection and someone to talk to about it, well, know that I'm here. You can find out more information about my consultations at martinball.net, or you can go to over to, as I mentioned, nondualentheogenicintegration.com, and I am available for 30, 60, and 90-minute calls. So with all that said, let's go ahead and get into this conversation. My client, his name is Daniel, and that's all that we're going to share with you guys. And I will say, stick it all the way out to the end, because there is a surprise twist at the ending of our interview, which is kind of fun and actually made me really excited to talk to Daniel. But, you know, Daniel's coming with not necessarily a very severe case of anything, just looking for some help and reflection. And so here's an example of what a conversation with me might be like if you wanted to reach out and set up a call. And of course, you can always email me at martinwball@gmail.com. All right, next week we'll have the next chapter from the Facilitating 5-MeO-DMT Anthology. And until then, please enjoy this conversation with Daniel working on integration of a 5-MeO-DMT experience.
So I'll start with where I usually start, and that is, of course, I've read your email, and I understand you had some recent experiences with 5. But the first question I'll just start with is there something in particular that you're looking for integration help on today that occurred within the experience or afterwards, or are you just looking to talk about it and get some insights in general?
Probably more the second. Prior to the experience, I definitely saw all this stuff like integration, and kind of thought to myself okay, it sounds good, but is it really necessary? It sounded a little overblown, like how much everyone was talking about integration. I'm not like a psychonaut kind of person, but I've done a few psychedelics, and I've done a lot of meditation retreats, and often like just going 10 days in silence and coming back, there's like an integration process. And so I felt like I was going to be able to handle the integration pretty well. But I think what kind of surprised me was like that it's so fast and so intense that it's kind of like, what happened was kind of my experience.
Yeah.
So much just happened in 25 minutes or 30 minutes. And so a light bulb kind of went off of like, oh, maybe it takes a little bit of integration just to kind of like go back and be like, what on earth did I just do?
Okay. You know,
was it good? Was it bad? Like what, how do I make sense of it? And just because it was so, and I think that's kind of the nature of the thing is that it starts so quick and it's over so quick.
Okay. Great. Well,
so that made sense to me to kind of like unpack it a bit. But nothing in, there's no like specific thing that came to mind. I gotta say, I was like, when it was a little more fresh, because I contacted you, I think like the next day, maybe.
Yeah.
When it was fresh, there was probably more of a sense of like, what the hell was that and what's going on? And now that I'm about 2 weeks out, I'm fully back into my life. And I had like a pretty intense nightmare last night, and I'm not usually like a nightmare kind of. It was a little bit unusual. I definitely had vivid dreams, like especially the first few days afterwards. So it does feel like maybe some of it, and even like kind of getting ready for this integration call, I kind of looked through some of my notes. I have some notes from the experience, and some of it is definitely still alive for me also, even though it's not like as fresh.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And 2 weeks is kind of a normal time period, actually. Like if people are going through unwanted reactivations and things like that, it's usually within that 2 week window. And by that point, the ego is really kind of reconstituted itself pretty solidly, and things tend to go back to normal. So let me just ask you just kind of some of the standard questions that I like to ask people before we actually get into the experiences that you've had. And then I'm going to ask you all kinds of questions about the experience and what happened and what you've been experiencing afterwards. But first, we'll just start with a little bit of background about yourself. Like you already mentioned, a little bit of experience with psychedelics, experience with meditation. And then also, I mean, you're not coming to me with like a trauma issue. Sometimes that happens. And then I do ask people, okay, well, what was the trauma? What was the childhood experience? So, you know, if there's anything that you think is significant from your earlier life that you feel might have impacted your experience in any way, then we can talk about that. But if not, you know, you don't need to bring it up. But otherwise, I am curious about just what your prior experiences are kind of working with altered states. And then the question that I always get to after that is, well, when you heard about 5-MeO, what made you say, yeah, I want to do that? So that's sort of the trajectory of questions that I'm interested in. I'll just be taking some notes here.
Okay, cool. So I'll start with the psychedelics. I've done mushrooms, LSD. LSD and MDMA, I did them both like twice maybe each, and kind of smaller doses. Not much. I wasn't even really into either of those. Done mushrooms a lot. Like, there's been a couple phases of my life where I was doing it maybe once a month or something. I had I typically took probably between 1 and 3 grams of mushrooms. And then the last time I think I did it, or the last real time I did it, for some reason, I just decided to do 5 grams all alone. I thought, you know, I'm not going to want to be out in public. And yeah. I'll just put on some music, lay in bed, and take 5 grams. And it was kind of too much for me, especially, I mean, it was just that I was alone. And I had a little bit of fear just doing that, of I'm not sure I can take care of my body right now.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what my body's quite doing. And, you know, I want to make sure it's like breathing and it's not like, I mean, I was aware of my body, but I just didn't feel like I could really do it. And there was no one else there. And I ended up texting who's now my wife, my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife. And I think I texted or I called. I'm not sure. It was hard to even operate a phone.
Yeah.
I was just like, and somehow I was like, I took a lot of mushrooms. Can you please make sure I'm okay? And she's like, okay, I'll check in on you in a little bit. And that calmed me down a lot. But overall, I wouldn't say that was like a good experience. Like, I didn't really enjoy that experience, partly because of that kind of anxiety.
Yeah.
But also it was like this weird, I don't know if maybe I'd taken even more, like 6 or 7 grams, maybe I would have just kind of completely gone. But I was in this state where it was like, things were really trippy. There was lots of like fractals and stuff and very trippy, but it wasn't like, and like I could, my thoughts weren't even coherent enough to really like make sense of things. Whereas, you know, on like a lower dose, it's like all these cool insights and a feeling of love and a memory of somebody or, you know, things like that. This was more just like my thoughts weren't even really working that well.
Yeah. So just let me ask you, in contrast with the other experiences, as you said, mostly between like 1 and 3 grams, were those more social in nature generally?
It started social. I mean, I started in like high school and started kind of socially. But it became more of like a spiritual kind of thing for me. I liked the kind of doing in nature, feeling kind of like some communion with nature and having these cool insights and feeling my heart open up and love. And it was always kind of like an intuitive thing of like, after I did it a few times or something, I'd be like, man, I need a break for a while. I might not do it for like a year or a few years. Definitely took some breaks of probably a few years at a time. But it was more of like a kind of spiritual kind of thing for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it definitely sounds like with this 5 gram trip that maybe you're sort of in between states, in a sense that, like you said, maybe if you'd taken a little bit more, it would have opened up to being more paradoxically rational or insightful at that level. But it does sound like just the anxiety and the discomfort of like, oh, maybe this is too much and I can't handle it. And you know, it's great that you had somebody to reach out to, but it does sound like most likely there was some internal resistance going on because it was just a lot. Yeah.
Well, and I think I've always kind of found with mushrooms, like the way up is always a little uncomfortable, always get a little bit of stomach ache, and it's kind of like things are getting more intense, and it's like, how much more intense is this going to get? Like, and then, you know, on that experience, like once I was a couple hours in or something and past the sort of peak, it was a lot more. It was like, okay, I know it's not going to get worse than this. So things start to relax again, but. I mean, I thought that was pretty similar with the 5-MeO also, which I'm sure we'll get into, but it was definitely like those first 5 minutes of, or even like the first 30 seconds. It's like, oh!
It's happening
so fast. How far is it going to go? And I took like what I guess are kind of smaller doses too. So,
yeah,
but yeah, we can get into that.
Yeah. So let me ask you then about meditation, and also you've stated that with these lower doses of mushrooms that you kind of had that sense of spirituality in nature, heart opening, sense of love. So I'm just kind of curious, how would you describe what you would call your own spirituality, and then where does, like, say, meditation fit within that?
Sure. So I've been pretty much doing meditation, Vipassana meditation, Theravada kind of style, since like 2009. So, like, intensively. I actually, you know, started meditating even before that, but I'd say for like, yeah, a solid 14 years, I've been very committed at doing like at least one 10-day retreat a year. And I did, at one point I did a 12-week retreat, silent retreat, and a whole bunch of other retreats and daily practice and things like that. My spirituality is like, you know, I wasn't raised with any kind of religion or anything.
Okay, I was going to ask. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really have any like strong beliefs of any kind of like spiritual or religious mm-hmm. kind of beliefs. I mean, I felt a lot of resonance kind of just reading your material of, I mean, it makes sense that like we're all just one thing and it's God, or, you know, you don't have to call it a God, I guess, but like it's one yeah. thing. And, yeah. you know, when you're born, well, like a body's born and then the body dies, but the body's made of dirt from the earth and it's breathing air that came out of the trees. And like, you know, it's all the one thing just kind of manifesting into this shape for a little while and then dissolving back into itself. So, okay. You know, which I think is kind of pretty scientific as well as backed up by sort of an intuitive sense as well.
Yeah. So then with the Vipassana retreats, just what would you describe that you felt that you gained from doing those practices? And this is something that you still do on a yearly basis?
Yeah. Yeah. So I have three kids now. Their ages 1, 3, and 5. So we're really busy, but I'm yeah. still, yeah. So, but I've still been doing like one 10-day retreat a year. I think I might've gone a little more than a year during the COVID part, but even then I was like, I think I did a self retreat at home or something. And, yeah, but I mean, there was other times where I was doing like 4 retreats a year or something like that. So, so one a year for me is like mild. And then I sit every morning for 30 minutes. I've been doing that for a long time. That's kind okay. of about all I can afford for my day.
Yeah, but that sounds like a really solid practice.
Yeah, and I mean, I love it. I think like if I look back to where I started, it's just like a huge difference in you know, my temperament, equanimity, and just like not getting all worked up about things, and a lot more calm, and being more calm, I feel like a lot more available to kind of connect and be present with other people.
Great.
So it's helped me with my kids, helped me in my relationship. It's been huge. I mean, obviously, I think it's been really important because I keep doing it.
So, yeah.
It feels like it's paid off a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
So, I mean, might as well tie that in. So in my meditation practice, though, it's a little strange, like when I compare it to others, which, you know, they always tell you not to do too much comparing your meditation to others, because that's like just cause suffering. But, you know, I've heard lots of people and read lots of books with people that have like really transcendent sort of meditation experiences, or they go into like a deep concentration and just sit in waves of bliss and things like that. Mostly my meditation has been a lot more like ordinary and painful and suffering.
Yeah.
Even like for all those years, it's like I go on a retreat and it's still just like lots of aches and pains. And but I do it more, not so much for like the cool states I get into, but more because I can see that it's having this benefit in my life. And every time I come back, I feel like a new person. Like I look back and I'm like, oh man, I've just changed and grown so much in 10 days. And so that's really the kind of reward of the practice. But that was definitely something that I wanted to kind of explore and was curious about with the 5-MeO, is like kind of going into different states. And I'd heard some people kind of comparing it to different, you know, access states of mind that similar to some things that happen to people in meditation. And so I was wondering if it was kind of like, would kind of push me into that space so that I could kind of get there and then maybe go back to my meditation and have a lot more access to different kind of states of mind that have been kind of just not really there for me. My last retreat, there was, so actually I found out about 5-MeO like a week after my last retreat or something. Like, I'd never heard of it before.
Yeah.
And I just come back from retreat, and that was it was an extremely like ordinary retreat. It was very, very ordinary feeling. But there was some sense, like, I think there's like some more to like meditation practice that I'm just not getting to. And so it was kind of a hope that maybe this would kind of lead to that somehow.
Yeah.
I can't say that it really has, this time around anyways. I mean, I'm feeling like I want to try, you know, 5-MeO again, but I don't know when, but
Yeah. Well, I will just give a little bit of feedback that these are definitely common reasons why people do end up going to 5-MeO. It's really common for people who are doing meditation practice, and it sounds like you're getting a lot of benefit from your meditation practice, but yeah, it can be enticing when you're reading about people's really deep transcendent meditations, which, you know, those get promoted a lot, but I'm of the opinion that they probably don't happen all that often. That's pretty rare for most people. And so, you know, having a long, consistent meditation practice, it's can be very desirable to, well, let's get that big boost that it sounds like this 5-MeO does. But I think, as you've also experienced, we haven't talked about it yet, but I think you've also experienced that it's so much in such a short time period that it can even be difficult to relate it to meditation. And this is one of the places where I always like to emphasize with people that 5-MeO DMT is not meditation. It's a really different energetic vehicle and process and experience, and that I think that they can be melded together, but it's just important to really look at it as its own unique phenomenology. And that it can deepen people's meditation practices afterwards. But that's also not a necessary or an automatic result that people get. Again, because it is so big, so fast, versus meditation is usually, it's very calming, right? As you're meditating, you're calming, you're focusing, you're centering, and you're getting
slow.
Yeah, and nice and slow. And you're getting that 30 minutes every morning just to kind of center yourself. And as you say, that helps you be more present, more connected, more calm, greater sense of equanimity, versus 5-MeO just gets there and goes bang, which is not calm. It's the complete opposite of calm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a big reason I've liked meditation. I mean, and I would say meditation was always like more important to me than psychedelics or mushrooms. And part of that was that feeling of like, there was something valuable for me about going really slow and kind of seeing, you know, even if you get into some really intense state, like you can kind of see the mind slowly getting into it, and then it's starting to slowly dissolve and come out of it. And like, so all that awareness of that process, and it's also like so sober, like everything that happens, you're like so sober feeling and present in meditation. I had a friend actually who he did a lot of psychedelics, and he used to say it's like, this would be so cool right now if I was sober, like about his trips. Like that was the one thing about it that was like, but I do feel that way with meditation. It feels really sober and clear and and slow and things like that. And you're right. It was pretty opposite of that. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like we're ready to get into the actual details. So let's start with describe for me, if you can, just the context of how the 5-MeO was served, you know, meaning like, were you inside? Were you outside? Were there other people present? Were you invited to lie down? Were you asked to stand up? You know, these are all different variables that show up.
Sure. So it was in an apartment in Vancouver on the 12th floor. And it was just like a small room with a kind of mattress. And they designed it as their, you know, ceremony room. So everything that's in there is part of that experience, and they don't use it for other things. Mm-hmm. And so I had two guides or sitters or whatever. I don't know what they call themselves, but a man and a woman, and they were kind of sitting on both sides of me. And then he kind of held the pipe and the flame to my lips, so I wouldn't have to do anything, just breathe in and then kind of lie down onto the mattress. And that was kind of how they started. And then they were pretty open about, like, you can do whatever you want. You know, you scream, whatever, move around, stand up, open your eyes, close your eyes. They had a eye mask. I didn't use it. They said, we'll play some music, but if you don't like it, you can tell us. We don't need to do that. So they were really like, you know, they had a little bit of a way that they do it, but it was very, there wasn't much like, in terms of like ritual and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, we lit a candle to start the ceremony and then blew it out at the end. And that was kind of the extent of ceremony.
It sounds like they did give you a little bit of prep before going in. I'm just curious. If you felt that was extensive, or did they just give you a general introduction?
It was pretty extensive. So they actually had me come the day before. So I'm not from Vancouver. I stayed in a hotel. They had me come the day before, and we met up the day before even for a couple hours just to kind of talk about intentions and logistics. And that was, I was pretty well prepped going into it.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a good supportive environment, and you felt like, you could trust and rely on these individuals. Would you say? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so, I definitely felt like I trust them. Like, they're not, cult leaders or going to take advantage of me or something like that. There was still like a feeling of like being strangers, mm-hmm. and maybe even like an awkwardness of like, I just kind of found you guys off the internet, and here I am paying you money to kind of give me some crazy intense molecule that's going to mess with my mind. Like, there was like kind of an awkwardness and like that didn't quite go away. I don't think like a fault of theirs, but I'm not sure what could have been different. And then I also, like, this is something I've thought of, is like, their style was to kind of do three doses of increasing strength. And I thought maybe, and again, it's no fault of theirs, but I thought maybe if there was a different circumstance, I could have been like pushed a little further to go a little further with it. I can understand their being cautious and conservative, I guess, to like not. I definitely wouldn't want someone who pushes really hard and is like, no, you gotta, you know, something like that would be too much. But I feel like maybe I could have had someone that would be, they were very much like, you know, what do you feel like? What do you want to do? How do you like this? Kind of like letting me kind of call the shots, a little bit more like leading me into it deeper might have helped, but it's kind of speculation, but.
Yeah. No, well, I think that that's a good point that, and this actually does show up a lot with people with 5-MeO, because it is very intimidating to know, like, oh, I'm going to be taking this, and this is like this really powerful experience. And sometimes it is really valuable, actually, for the person facilitating, especially, And it's one thing to ask you, how do you feel? Do you feel like you want more? But if we're working from a standard of, well, I really want to see this person have a full energetic experience, whatever that's going to be for them, that there is a place to encourage people to take more. And actually, I can see you're still holding on, or I can see you're still here. Now would be a good time to take another hit. That having that encouragement, because it can be hard for people to find that encouragement within themselves. And if you feel like you can trust the person facilitating, then that's where that can just be very valuable.
Yeah. Or like, even I think if they had been like, you know, I know it seems really crazy right now, but like tomorrow you're going to be back to normal. Like you're going to be back to your wife and kids and your job. And you're going to like, you know, this is just an experience. Like, cause I think that was part of it, was like, it was also new. And I didn't know, like, am I going to be, like, you know, coming back all weird? Like, I don't know. Like, things were just so shaken up. It was like, I didn't know how to make sense of it. And it's interesting because I had a lot of prep, like, knowing what, you know, listening to podcasts or whatever, reading about it. And yet still it was, like, so surprising of, like, oh, I didn't expect this. Like, this is... is not what I thought was going to happen. I mean, I also didn't have any expectations, but
yeah. Okay. Well, just go ahead and then let's walk through the sequence of experiences as they unfolded. And I might stop you to ask some questions here and there.
Okay. So yeah, we started with the handshake 1 PM ish. So it's 2 milligrams. So, I mean, I wrote down notes. So like the first couple minutes, it was a little bit unpleasant, and there was definitely this voice or kind of energy of like, oh, I don't like this. I don't want to do this. Like, oh, I don't want to be here. I don't want to be feeling this. It wasn't like overwhelming, and it wasn't even like all that much suffering. And I think with my meditation practice, there was kind of a witnessing of it, of like, mm-hmm. oh, like this is me kind of feeling some resistance. But that was definitely there. And then that also intensified in the further doses. So that kind of came on in the first couple minutes. But the other thing I noticed about that is that it would change so fast. Like everything was changing so quick that it would be like, oh, I don't like this. And then the next moment I might be like laughing or something like,
yeah. Why didn't I like this? What was the problem?
Yeah, and it was like on to the next thing. And then it was like, oh, everything's relaxing. And then, oh, some tension. And then it's relaxing.
Oh, so let me ask you about that. So I think you said that you laid back down after taking mm-hmm. your hit. So then in kind of cycling through this tension and resistance and then, oh, this is okay. Did you notice mm-hmm. changes physically within your body of anything that was happening? Was there like a bracing when it was uncomfortable and then a relaxation where the musculature released?
Yeah. I'm like starting to feel some things in my body even right now.
Yeah. That's very common.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so, and this is where, so they actually took some notes too, and they sent them to me.
Mm. Well, that's great.
So, I mean, I think, let's see how they'd put it. Big exhale, arms to side, laughter, shaking, deep exhales, big stretch, laughter, crying, laughing, jaw release, nice big exhales, arms spread wide to side, legs spread, sighing, laughing, growling, sighing, body moves in waves. So that feels like that summarizes it pretty well. It felt to me a lot like a internal massage or something, or like a massage of like spiritual energy, like that I didn't even know was there. Like it was bodily, but it was something even like deeper than bodily, like energetic.
Yeah.
Was the best way I can describe it. So interestingly, like I knew about your symmetric thing.
Yeah.
But I kind of went into it like, I don't know if that guy's really like, I don't know about this symmetric stuff. Like it looks, you know, whatever. We'll see. But I did actually notice a couple times, like, I specifically on this handshake, I remember at one point kind of, I was laying back like this and I could feel kind of my right hand kind of like going like this.
Yeah.
And it like a, and it felt, and then it kind of went into my chest and I could feel it as a kind of like tension, and it felt kind of asymmetric, and it felt like, oh, like this, some, like there's something here. And then I don't know if like some growling came out or something, but like something definitely kind of, some noise kind of came with it as it kind of moved through me and then kind of like relaxed. And I did notice that when I was, you know, more relaxed, it felt symmetric. And so it did kind of feel like, oh, maybe there is something to it. Like I wasn't intentionally trying to, I was more like, either way, I was like, I don't know if I'm symmetric, I'm symmetric. If I'm not, I'm not. Just trying not to like, you know, let that color my experience. But I did notice kind of like some of these things kind of started out like with a sort of asymmetry that would kind of build into a, some kind of release and then a relaxing. And then, yeah. And then other than the like first couple minutes of like the come up, this feeling of like, I don't like this. Other than that, like overall, I think I'd had a really, I thought of it as like a really good experience. I was like, that was cool. Like I liked it. I had some like, thoughts of my wife that was like really loving. Oh, another thing that kind of brought me to 5-MeO is that I'm a hospice nurse. So I'm not sure if I mentioned that, but that was actually the clincher for me when I heard people talking about their death experiences. And I actually heard about Tony Robbins, you know him?
Yeah.
So he, I guess, talks about doing 5-MeO, and he, the way he tells his story is like his whole life he'd been working with people on living, like how to live a better life. You know, he's like, that's what he's all about, like live life to the fullest. And he'd always had trouble connecting with people with like terminal cancer and things like that until, according to him, he did 5-MeO. And after that, that was the first time that he really felt like he could kind of connect with dying people also. So I heard that story. I was like, oh, this is like, you know, I got to try this because,
yeah.
You know, because hospice for me, it's more than just a career. It's kind of like a passion or whatever. So,
yeah. Oh, well, that's a great motivation.
And then even in that like small handshake dose, there was some like really interesting kind of like death imagery, even in that first small dose. Yeah. So I came away, walked away from that feeling like, oh, this is worth it. Just this, I'm not exactly sure why I thought that, but I definitely thought that.
Yeah.
And I forget what else I was going to say, but yeah.
Okay, well, let me just jump in with just a few comments on there. So it sounds like what you're describing here, there is still a witness consciousness present. It doesn't sound like you hit the point of like, Daniel is now dissolving, Daniel's going away, Daniel's dying, but still very energetically noticeable. And that's one of the things that even with a very small dose of 2 milligrams, that it is surprisingly strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was the thing I just forgot that I was going to say. Yeah. Is that I was like, this is probably the most intense psychedelic experience I've ever had, you know, and this is the handshake. What the, I mean, it's short. You know, it's a lot shorter. So in that sense, it's not as intense. And I was also kind of shocked by, so after that was done, they were very like open. They're like, what do you want to do next? And I was like, I want to journal. So that's when I kind of wrote down some notes. So it was, you know, probably like hour and a half till we were back in doing the next dose. From the first to the second, I don't remember exactly, but I was kind of shocked by after about an hour or so, like how quickly I was just back to normal. I was like, wow, I feel completely, completely sober right now. And that was also kind of surprising.
Yeah. Well, let me just comment on a couple of things. One is I just wanted to say that it sounds like you were very free with your vocalizing and expressing that, you know, the notes that the facilitators gave you, that you were laughing, shaking, growling, laughing, sighing, which is really good, which shows that as you're feeling all these energies and kind of noticing these different bodily sensations, that you're really allowing yourself to express around it. And this is another area where working with 5-MeO is fundamentally different from meditating, right? Because if you're meditating, maybe at most you're chanting a mantra or something like that. But here, there's so much to feel that to let it out, to let it be vocalized is a really important part of the process, because it dissolves the boundaries between what you're feeling and what you're expressing, so that it becomes, you know, a totality in that sense, where you're authentically expressing what you're going through as you're feeling all that. And it is interesting that you just mentioned that it was around an hour in between the first round and the second round, and that you wanted to journal and take some notes. You know, just by point of comparison, that this is a place back when I was facilitating where I would have said, like, if we were working together, I would have said, well, Daniel, you can take as many notes as you want, but we're going to wait to the end. Because as soon as we're, you know, when we're working with notes, we're going back into language, which is really a strong connector with the ego, because it's connecting with rationality, conceptuality, and parceling out, you know, the universal into particulars. And so that's actually a way of helping to reintegrate and reform the ego. But in a multi-round session, that's something that I would want to delay until the very end. And ideally, even before you reach that point of feeling like, okay, I'm back down to zero now, I usually encourage people to take the next hit before they reach that point. Because, I mean, as you can see that...
I just checked the notes, actually. It was an hour and 20 minutes between from the first one to the second one.
Okay. So, you know, this is just something to keep in mind, that if you do go back, that it does tend to be more effective if you take that second round before you've had a very long time period. Now, of course, this is another area where, of course, it's your choice. It's when you feel ready, that's when to do it. But my advice is, don't let yourself get all the way back down to zero. Go back in. And this also shows you that even with this huge intensity of just 2 milligrams, it shows you how resilient the ego actually is, that it really takes a lot of input of energy to force that opening within the ego, and that anything below the threshold that is just like, oh, fuck, I can't handle this, the ego can still maintain itself. It can still be there. And it's when we go beyond the threshold is when the fullest potential of the 5-MeO experience really opens up. And that can be managed with smaller doses, but it's important to stack them not too far apart so that you're kind of building on, right? So you're growling, you're laughing, you're feeling some tension, you're feeling some openness, and you're kind of in sync with the energy at that point, because you're vocalizing along with it. And so that's where I'd say, yeah, okay, great. You're able to sit up now? Great. Mm-hmm. Now it's time for another hit. And this time, let's go even deeper. Yeah.
So interestingly, and so I'm kind of going to jump ahead. So the second one was 5 milligrams, really intense. The third one was 4 milligrams, a little more manageable. But interestingly, after the 4 milligrams, so in the third round, there was a moment at around like maybe the 20 minute mark or something, where I was still fully in it, but like kind of coming back, where I did for a moment almost like said to them, like, can we just load it real quick? And like, but it was like almost too much energy to kind of try to say all that. And I didn't know if that was a good idea. And so I kind of canceled that idea in my own mind before I even mentioned it. But there was a moment where I was like I feel like I could use another, just kind of keep that momentum and just like, you know, like I'm already in it, just like, let's keep going.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Exactly. That this is exactly what I'm talking about. So you had enough to really, you're open, you're in it, you're feeling it. And this is what happens, where you get this, this inspiration to want more and to go deeper and to keep going with it. And then the egoic mind comes back in and says, oh, well, should you really be asking for that? Or is that really necessary? Or, you know, whatever it may be, that it's that second guessing. And that's where I do like to tell people that as soon as you have that thought that you're ready for more, trust it, follow that, and just really intuit that is this deeper level of yourself that's like, come on, come on, let's go even deeper. And then the resistance will show up, you know? So sometimes people are lying down and then they'll sit up and they're like, can I have some more? And then as it's being prepared for them, they're like, oh, wait, I don't know if I'm ready for that or not, or maybe I'm done for today. And that's the place where sometimes if the facilitator is a little too accommodating and too timid, there's, okay, well, whatever you want, versus, hey, I felt that intuition that you were ready for more. And so I really want to encourage you, like, go for it, like, trust that. And that's when people really are able to open up the most.
Yeah. Well, so that was, I mean, the whole thing was kind of this, I don't want to say battle. I was going to say battle, but not quite. I mean, I wasn't like at war with myself, but like tug of war. That's still a war, like tugging a rope against each other of like, there was the part of me that was definitely like, I came here to explore. I want to go all the way. Like, you know, this, I only get one life. I want to see what, you know, what this mind is capable of. And then there was the part of me that was just like, I didn't even know how afraid it was. And that was kind of, in a way, its own insight that I got to kind of take away from this, of like discovering how much fear I had. But the other side that was like so afraid and kind of building through the process and trying to kind of like get the two to kind of negotiate, like, how are we going to work this out? So everyone's happy. And yeah, it's interesting to hear that I guess is pretty common, but.
Yeah. And that's also, in a sense, I don't want to use too loaded of language here, but I do want to say it this way, that's one of the dangers with working with lower or medium doses, is that internal disagreement doesn't reach the point where it can just be overridden by the intensity and enormity of the experience, so that people can ride out that internal tension the whole way through, right? Because again, it's not really enough energy to completely override the ego. And so these are two different parts of the ego. One is saying, hey, I want to go more, I want to go deeper. And I would say that is connected to the deeper sense of self, but that's still the ego, right? It's still the ego desiring something. And then the other part is like, fuck, this is kind of terrifying. And this is like really out of control. And this is really intense. I don't want any more. And this is why I always say that someone's first experience with the medicine really is what I like to call the diagnostic round. That, like you said, that you weren't really aware that there was that sense of, ooh, wait, no, I'm afraid. And that's why I like to say that, you know, when someone comes from their first experience, that back when I was facilitating, I wouldn't even ask people like, where do you think you're at? What do you think you're ready for? Because I would tell them like, you'll tell me a story of where you think you're at and what you think you're ready for. But we're just going to take a really big dose, and then we're going to find out where you're actually at, because this is going to put you into this potential crisis mode where you're either going to act out of where you're holding on, or you're going to decide it's not possible to hold on, and then you like let go. And then whatever unconscious material or energies need to surface at that point, then they have access to be able to do that. But when we're working in these more intermediate levels with five, we don't get that override to happen. And so the battle can just persist.
So this is a question I wanted to kind of ask.
And
this is kind of the voice of the scared part of me a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think I heard you just kind of saying forcing it, overriding, like using those kinds of words is like another difference maybe for meditation. Like meditation is all about peace. Like,
yeah,
peace of mind, being peaceful in the world. Like it's also, you know, peaceful actions out in the world, you know, living like a monk and stuff. And I don't know maybe what to think about it, but like part of me is kind of hesitant of like, maybe that's not good to kind of like force myself open or force myself into this world of, you know, or different, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, the question is, but
yes, I mean, so
can you hurt yourself that way? Forcing yourself to kind of go there?
No, because so by forcing, let's just put it into an analogy. It's like, well, look, I can go and I can jump off a cliff and that can be a thrilling experience, or I can convince myself, let's go up in the plane and put the parachute on and like, let's really do this. Let's really fly through the sky. So once you're up in the plane and once you jump out, that's what I mean by forcing, in the sense that you're setting up a situation where the ego is going to need to make a fundamental choice. Like, do I continue to fight with this and hold on, or do I just surrender and say, hey, I'm flying through the air and I'm just going to let it happen. And this is where, because the ego can't just make itself let go, because it is evolutionarily designed to be incredibly resilient and to be self-replicating, right? So that it keeps maintaining itself. And by giving ourselves sort of this opportunity or this crisis moment where it is so overwhelmed that it feels like the best choice here actually is just to surrender rather than fight with it. So it's always a matter of free will. It's always a matter of choice, and including the choice to say, well, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and take a bigger dose so that I bring myself to that threshold where I really do need to choose. Am I just going to fight with this and hold on, or am I going to fully trust and fully surrender and fully let go? And that's where the potential is so much higher, because at 5 milligrams, even if you fully let go within that, it's still not likely to become a completely non-dual or completely transcendent experience. It's still going to be, okay, I'm relaxed, I'm feeling all this energy, I'm expressing, it's changing a lot, but I still know that I am going through this. I still know that it's me here in the room having this experience. But once you get up to like 10, 12, 15 milligrams, then it's just within seconds, it's like, oh my God, this is it. I have to let go. This is it. This is it. Okay. And then you have that opportunity. And that's where it actually becomes the practice for death before dying. Because yeah. So when death comes, that is an event that ultimately is forced upon us. We're all going to die sooner or later. And so since you work in hospice, you've probably also seen that there are individuals who are holding on to life, even though their quality of life might be next to zero. And you, as the hospice provider, you might actually feel like, you know what? If I could encourage this person to let go right now and just be at peace with it and accept it and let them trust that this actually can be a very beautiful experience, that would be the best thing for this person. Mm-hmm. You know, like I had a friend who had cancer, and, you know, unfortunately, I mean, I don't want to put too much judgment on it, but I will say that she, from my perspective, not living with her, you know, I was not her provider or anything like that, but from my outside perspective and knowing her partner, that, and he, I think he would also agree with this, that she held on a lot longer than was really of any benefit to her, because she was so afraid of dying. And so then her last many months were just complete and utter misery. Okay. And so this is where, again, if we can reach sort of that crisis point with 5-MeO, where it's like, oh my God, this is it. Can I just let go and surrender into it? That's where you have this opportunity to really trust and really let go. And then it does feel like dying, but it can be this really blissful, ecstatic experience as you're dying versus, oh my God, I don't want to go yet, so I'm going to use everything that I can to hold on. And that's usually when it becomes a very difficult and even traumatic experience for people. And so this is where there's the clear parallel to hospice care, that there might be times where you'd want to encourage someone like, you know what, you're actually in a good place right now. You're on the verge of death. You could probably hold on for a few more months, but is that really of value to you? Or do you want to give yourself the gift of choosing to let go now and do it in a way that's going to be beautiful and peaceful and maybe even ecstatic, that there's the potential that the act of dying actually could be ecstatic. It could be a moment of bliss of like, I don't need to worry about anything anymore. I don't need to worry about my health. I don't need to worry about my family. I can just let go and have this expansion. So forcing is a tricky word, but it's kind of like giving yourself enough intensity so that you can have that moment of needing to choose.
Yeah, it's still, even as I'm hearing you talk about it, like I can feel the fear of like I want to do it again and I feel afraid.
Yeah.
It's interesting how both of those are there.
Which is totally normal. It's totally
But I wanted to say that, so going back to the second round.
Yeah.
So that was 5 milligrams. And I wouldn't call it like a bad trip or something, but it was the most uncomfortable of the three, or the a little bit ambivalent, like of like where I was kind of like, I'm not sure if I actually enjoyed that, and
yeah,
I probably wouldn't ever recommend anyone else do this. It was but my experience, so it was definitely like not the full release or the full letting go. Like I was definitely still there, I was still having the experience, I was aware of me, Daniel, having the experience. So it's definitely still in that realm, but the intensity was felt so intense. And to me, it really felt like involuntary at that point. Like I felt like I had completely let go. I mean, I didn't try to like resist or try to open my eyes or try to see like, can I come out of this? Like I just went fully in it. And so I don't know, like, if I could have, or, you know, like, kind of put the brakes on. But I just kind of went with it. And I mean, it was so intense. And it's like rolling feet inward, convulsing, shaking, loud screams, cries, vocal release. What the fuck? I said.
Yeah.
That was at 5 minutes. I said, what the fuck? Laughter, hands and fists, sits up. There was some crying, lies back down. Then I was saying thank you a whole bunch. I asked them to put their hand on my heart. My tongue comes out, body moving in waves, deep gutted vocalizations. Then yes, 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 with stretching arms, full body stretches left and right, more stretches. Sits up, forward stretch. Like even in that description, it's like you can kind of tell it's like another level
of
intensity. But like the body, I mean, it was like there was like I would feel a scream coming, and there was no, to me it felt like there was no stopping that scream. It was just like, and it was like primal stuff, like not like, oh, I'm angry right now and I'm gonna let out my anger. It was like, and like I think deep gutted vocalization, like things like that. And it was a little overwhelming. And and I think that was kind of maybe when there was more hesitation started to kind of come in of like, I don't know if I could handle more of this or even handle this again, which is why for the last one, I was like, let's come back down to 4 because 5 was a little much. Like I still wanted to, my decision process, I was like, I still want to keep going. But you know, 4 would maybe slow things down just a little bit so that I could kind of like see what's happening a bit more. Like I can check out the scenery a little and like kind of explore the experience, find out more about it. So that was kind of how I decided to do the 4, and it ended up being like really great. And like I mentioned in the email also, like I did also kind of get to a point of completion as well, which was kind of part of the decision of like, okay, I feel good and I'm ready to go home. And I don't know if it's like, maybe part of the fear is like knowing that I will let go, like not that I'm afraid and so I'm going to hold on, but like I know that I'm probably just going to let go and relax. And that's like terrifying in itself or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be, because see, even here with this more intense round, you're still aware of the fact that you're doing things. And that also, even though it's strange and unusual and really intense, that also is very satisfying to the ego, because it says, well, at least I'm doing something, right? I'm really growling, you know, I'm sticking my tongue out. I'm thrashing about. I'm saying these things. But it's interesting that you describe this as like the most uncomfortable and maybe too uncomfortable, and you're more ambivalent about this one here. But really everything that you've described here, just from, you know, my own perspective, I'd say, well, this actually sounds very productive. This is really good, because again, what's happening is, as we're introducing all this energy into your system, it's going to challenge the ego, and it's going to challenge wherever there might be repressed or unexpressed energies that you might not even be consciously aware of that were in you. And so what it's doing is, even at this level, because you're so allowing yourself to be engaged with it, that all of this stuff is processing out and it's processing through. And these are phases that most people need to go through in their work with 5-MeO. And I'm really praising you on this, because just notice the difference. So sometimes people take a hit and they get really, really uncomfortable. And then what they do is they lie there and they're just kind of like this. And you can see on their face that they're like, oh my God, I'm really terrified. I'm really uncomfortable. And they cross their hands and they cross their legs and they're trying to look cool. You know, like, okay, I'm just chilling here. But you can tell, like, no, actually, you really want to scream. I can tell you want to scream, but they're hesitant. And so they're putting a cap on it and they're not letting it out. And so even though you were uncomfortable, again, you were letting yourself actually express it. And not just express it, but you are embodying everything that you were feeling. So this is all an excellent primer. This is what we want. We don't want the, oh my God, this is terrible. Oh, I just need to be really quiet and hope I get to the end of this. But you're actually, you know, the what the fuck. I mean, that's a really classic common one. And then going from that into thank you, you know, and also asking to have hand on your heart, you know, that it's very good that you had a sense of, this is something that I can use. I'm going to ask for it. And so this is another place where people sometimes they say, well, I really wanted a hand on my heart, but, you know, I didn't want to impose, or I didn't want to ask, or who am I to ask for that? And so these are all really positive aspects, because it shows that you're not filtering yourself. Now, the experience was not what you were hoping for, is not what you were expecting in the vague sense that you had an expectation. But this is all very good in that clearly you did not let yourself operate with any kind of filter. And you were letting the experience and the energy run through you, and you were embodying and expressing it. So what can happen?
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
So because you kind of made me remember, one of the, and this is kind of the sort of skeptical part of my mind asking the question, is like one of the felt experiences was kind of like what you're describing, like I'm moving a lot of energy, mm-hmm. you know, and if I believed in chakras and meridians and stuff, like I could easily put that into this package of like, there was a lot of like midline feelings and like I'm moving lots of energy or kundalini or something like, and like felt like this sort of spirit massage or something. But then kind of at the end of it, and this is maybe like the next day or things like that, the skeptic in me kind of comes in and is like, well, what really happened? Like, did anything real, like, what are the results? Like, you know, like you felt something, like you feel these energy, but like, where's the, how do you know where the energy, was there really energy moving? Or did you just like, you just sat there and screamed and shaked around. Like, is that really all that interesting? Like you gave yourself a little seizure, like, you know, which is like, you know, I don't take the skeptic too seriously, but this is kind of my skeptical thoughts. And, but it's also like wanting to see like what, but then it kind of leads to this bigger question, like, what is the point? Like, why did I do this? And why am I still interested? You know, is it actually like useful? Is this going to make my life better in any way? Like, is there actually any result? So I don't know. I guess the question is kind of like, to what extent do you think all that energy movement was a sort of process of, I don't know, cleansing or healing or something that maybe doesn't have a direct link to some content. You know, like I didn't, actually I did have one healing moment where like I saw a traumatic experience come up and I kind of cried through it and stuff. And that was more on the kind of downhill slope of the, of one of those trips. But, you know, so some of the experiences had some content, but some of it's just like energy flow. And when there's no content, it's really easy to be like, so what? Like, how does this relate to my life? And does it, or does it even matter if it relates to my life or not? Like, it's got me a little bit in a quandary of like, what's the point? And does it need to have a point? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. No, these really excellent questions. And all of this, aside from just the energy and the process, all of the rest of that, we can just identify, okay, that's the ego, okay? So for example, you're feeling all this energy and you're starting to think, wow, well, maybe there are these chakras, maybe there are these meridians. And that's the ego wanting to identify and create meaning around something and hopefully find, is there a box I can put this into somewhere? And this is where I always, my personal take on it is I ask people, please do not fit your 5-MeO experience into any pre-existing box. So if you immediately turn to, oh, well, now I've got to learn about chakras, I've got to learn about meridians, it's like, look, that comes from a different culture with different methodologies, and that just please just don't. Let's actually deal with the reality of the energy itself. And another thing I like to say is, like, energy is real. Our interpretations that we make of it, that's where we get into projection and meaning making and the constructs of the ego. But energy itself is real. That's the only thing that's real, is energy. So yes, absolutely. You're feeling all of this energy. And I actually prefer it to not necessarily be identified with any specific content, because usually that is the mind trying to make some kind of meaning out of it. And what I would tell people back when I was facilitating is I would say, look, if it's important for you to know what that energy that you were releasing was related to, you'll know it. So as you describe, you had a earlier childhood traumatic experience that came up and you cried around that and you released around that. And so that's an instance where you were able to identify, oh, this is what the energy is. Now the rest of it, this is all unconscious, unprocessed energy that's been stored inside your body and inside your being through choices and decisions that you have made over the course of your life of how you're going to act or how you're going to be or how you're going to relate. And a lot of the structures of the ego come from early childhood decisions that we're no longer aware of we decided to be this particular way. And so everybody comes with a great deal of unprocessed, unexpressed energy. And so the really crude analogy that I used to use with people, I said, look, if your toilet is clogged, do you want your toilet to work or do you want it to be clogged? And everybody says, well, of course I want my toilet to work. I want it to flush. I said, okay, so what we're going to do, 5-MeO, by introducing the energy of 5-MeO into your system, what it's going to do is it's going to find everywhere that you may be clogged or disconnected or where you might have anything that hasn't been expressed or flushed through, and it's going to find it and it's going to bring it to the surface. And as long as you allow the process to take place, this is going to create an energetic reconditioning that moves out all of this stuck, unprocessed material. And just like when you're trying to fix your toilet, we could sit around and we could talk about like, oh, well, what did you eat that made it, you know, clog the toilet? And like, well, tell me about your diet and all of that. Or we could just get the plunger and go plunge, 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 flush. Look, it works. 5-MeO is the ultimate plunger in that sense. Now, in terms of what's the benefit of that? Well, the benefit is that the more—
The benefit, but also like— you know, what's the test of that, I guess? Because like if you plunge your toilet, well, first it's not working, then afterwards you flush it and it's working. So there's a real clear like before and after, like, okay, this worked, this, there was really a clog and it's really gone now. Whereas this seems more you know, ethereal, that it's like hard to grasp, like hard to measure, kind of something like that. So
yeah. Well, here's the way that it usually works. So you're still only 2 weeks out. And so if we look at it this way, we can say, look, we had this flushing out of the system. And you might not notice it now, but in the coming weeks and coming months, what you will most likely start to feel is that you'll notice ways that maybe you're censoring yourself, or you might notice ways that you're projecting, or that you're attached, or that maybe you're performing. In other words, you might start to feel areas where you're starting to feel a little bit inauthentic, or you might feel like you're returning to older patterns or something like that. And so what happens is that you might not notice that actually your system is all flushed out, but as you start to accumulate junk again, it becomes more noticeable. It's like, wow, okay. I'm stuffing it all back in now. Why am I choosing to do that? And this is where...
So, I mean, that kind of already happened to me.
Okay.
So that's kind of good to hear. So so one of the things... So part of their prep, because they did do a really good prep, is part of the prep they did kind of ask about more earthly things and psychological things. And I said... just kind of like, well, you know, it'd be nice if I had more patience with my kids. Not like that was really the reason I was going, but I was kind of like, that's something I'd like to get out of it. And then I was kind of, and then I actually had a lot of experience during the trip where it was like feeling love for my kids, new kind of perspectives on my relationship, came home feeling really connected with them. But then a couple nights later, like impatience came on strong, like, and it was like, oh, I don't know if this really, you know, in terms of that, checking that box, like this didn't really get rid of the impatience, because here it is, it's full force impatience. But it was interesting because it did more like what you said, it became really obvious. And then I was able to be like, oh, like, I don't want to be this impatient. And I started to take it more seriously, like, oh, I really need to like, and so I started listening to some parenting podcasts, and I was like, been working on it, and I actually am feeling really good with my kids right now. But it was almost exactly like you described it. Like this shit came back, felt really off, like more obvious than normal, and gave me the inspiration to kind of do something about it instead of just like complain about it, or it would be nice if someday I would. So
yeah,
well, so that's interesting.
Yeah, it's so awesome that you mentioned that. And I will tell you that actually in you telling me that, I just got goosebumps everywhere, because it's just like, oh yeah, that's so it. Like that actually like jazzed me up a bit, because that's exactly what I mean. That, see, the ego, again, is built on unconscious patterns. And so we enter into states of frustration or disappointment or whatever it is, and we're just kind of trapped by it. And we're so stuck in it that we don't know how to get out. So when we introduce the energy of 5-MeO, it gives us either these openings to start to release some of this stuff, or it gets us all the way beyond it into the transcendent experience. And then it's even more distinct as everything starts coming back. But the thing is, this is why I always say, look, it's not about singular experiences with 5-MeO. It's not about, oh, it was beautiful, or it was great, or it was terrible, or anything like that. It's part of an ongoing process of personal transformation into a more authentic and liberated state. And as we move through this energetic process of this reconditioning that takes place, we're releasing old baggage. And then as we're starting to put that baggage back on, where you start to become more consciously aware of why we are choosing to do it. And it's usually based on some kind of story we've told ourselves that is not fundamentally true. And so it's bringing these unconscious things that we were just living with before, it starts to bring us to our awareness, and then we can choose, well, actually, I don't want to do that. And then, as you say, you went to looking at, well, let's get some parenting advice. That it's not that 5-MeO is going to solve your problems with your kids,
yeah,
but it's going to bring the awareness of, you know what? I actually don't enjoy inhabiting this energy of being annoyed or impatient with my children. And so now that I'm aware of it, and I've had the chance to feel otherwise, I'm all that much more motivated to actually take the necessary steps that are required for me to transform the behavior. And this is where then you're looking at your normal 3D life, and you're applying that lesson of what I want to get to is just that sense of free-flowing energy and unconditional love and acceptance with my children. But all this other stuff is getting in the way. So what can I do to deconstruct that? And then as people get returned to feeling stuck again, that's when it's very beneficial to go do your next session, and you get to unload some of that. And what I wanted to say earlier is that even short of just working with these sort of mid-range doses, there tend to be two rather normal trajectories within the 5-MeO experience. So for some people, if they get a full release dose on their first hit, and it's so overwhelming that they don't even think they have a choice, and they just go all the way into the transcendent experience, and it's divine, and it's ecstatic, and it's beautiful, and it's lovely, that's great. And I like to tell people, great, you got the experience of divine grace. What you can expect after that is now it's going to be more growling and screaming and purging and writhing, because now that you've had that transcendent experience, you don't necessarily get to go back there every time, because every person comes with a backlog of stuff that's unresolved. And if so, if we continue to work with it, then we unwind all that stuff. And then people might eventually get back to that beautiful transcendent state. The other trajectory is people go through their period of unwinding and releasing first, and then eventually they hit that point where it's effortless and, oh, this is the divine grace I've been looking for. So you're more on this second pathway of you've got some unwinding and releasing to do first. And just from the descriptions that you've given from your experience, you engaged with it beautifully. So my assessment of your sessions is that it might not have been what you were hoping for, but it was very productive. And I would say this absolute success. These are definitely successful experiences.
That's kind of how it feels, but it's nice to have a kind of to hear you say that, because it's kind of like it's a little hard to, from my perspective being so close to it, to kind of know if it was a success or not. So
and just notice that's also another way that the egoic mind operates. It wants to know, was that successful or was that a failure? Did I do it right? I do it wrong? Was that worthwhile? Was that not worthwhile? And what I always like to do is help people shift out of the mental chatter around it and just go back into asking yourself, well, how do you feel? How do you feel in your body? How do you feel in your life? How do you feel in your heart? And as you're noticing sort of the crustiness of, oh, there's aggravation now again in my heart. It's like, and you remember how that wasn't there for a couple of days. Like, so what can I do to cultivate going back into that feeling of, oh, this feels good? And even getting back to that sensation of thank you. Like, you can practice at this point saying thank you, remembering and recalling your experience and inviting that energy of just that thank you, thank you, thank you. And using that to open yourself up to your continued processing of your energetic presence, of being who you are in that open-hearted state, in that state of gratitude, that's where it's just invaluable.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really helpful. I think if I were to use the plunger metaphor, it's kind of like the problem isn't that the toilet's clogged. The problem is that I'm constantly putting stuff in the toilet.
Yeah.
It shouldn't go there. And you plunge it once, it just kind of shows you, hey, this is how a toilet works when it's clean.
Yeah.
And then the next day you keep throwing junk in it. And then you're like, oh, if I don't throw the junk in it, I can actually have a clean toilet. So it's not like... It's not like the plunging just solves the problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So there is the action of taking 5-MeO, and then there's also what do we do with it? How do we allow it to transform our perspective? And it's always comes back to, am I taking responsibility for myself or not? Because we pick up all the junk because we're not really being responsible. And, you know, that's not to blame anyone, because again, we made those decisions to pick up that junk and to behave those ways usually when we were kids, before we really had a rational understanding of what it was that we were doing. And now it's just embedded within our unconscious that we've built our whole sense of being up around that. So it's this opportunity to unwind the past so that we can really be present with where we are right now. And that's what allows us to transform into more of who we've always been. It's not this transformation to a completely new character. It's a transformation into more of who we've always been, just in a way that is freer, more open-hearted, and more authentic, and more available to be in love with your children, more available to be in love with yourself, to be in love with your life, to be in love with your wife and what you do, you know, as a hospice worker, and really bring that sense of compassion and authenticity into all of that.
Hmm. Thank you. Yeah, that feels good.
Good.
I can feel it now. So it
feels good. Yeah, I can see you feeling that. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, the thank you was like really real in that moment. Like,
yeah.
Thank you. I said thank you probably a lot of times during the experience. Thank you.
Yeah.
It feels like that right now. Yeah.
Yeah. And so even whenever you hit a point of feeling tense or feeling, feeling clogged, it just really would want to invite you to go back to that energy and just say it again and just go back to that. And that's a way of like inviting the medicine experience to keep working on you, to go back into that energy. And most likely you will find that it becomes harder to really get back to that feeling the further out you are from the experience. And that's why, again, it is worthwhile to go back, to keep doing the work, and to know that you're not going to be able to predict what's going to come up for you, and that probably there will be a lot of fear there, because that's normal. But appreciating what it's bringing you beyond what you can specifically measure or observe, again, going back into, am I being able to feel more loving and connected and present, and a sense of gratitude for my experience, that's the real gift.
Okay.
All right. Well, is there anything else we need to cover? I think we've covered a lot of ground here. Excuse me.
I'm sure I could probably keep talking about it, but I mean, that's so far, that's been really helpful. And there's a couple pieces in there that really kind of helped me kind of make sense of it and stuff. So yeah. So I'm glad we did this. Yeah, definitely.
Great. All right. Well, Daniel, we will now officially bring to a close. That was our integration call. Boom.
Okay.
And
thank you.
Yeah.
I'll just say it right now. Thank you.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you. So I just want to close this out with just a couple questions. The first is that this was a very unique offer or suggestion on your part, that you suggested that we record this as a podcast. And I'm just curious, what brought that idea to you?
I've always been kind of creative, and I've done other kind of podcast type things in the past, completely unrelated to psychedelics. But basically what happened is the next morning, I had the experience on Sunday, and then Monday morning I was in Vancouver still, and I went for a run around Stanley Park, which I don't know if you've been there, but it's just a beautiful giant park in Vancouver.
I've been there.
And I wanted to listen to something with my headphones while I ran. And I found your interview with, I think it was Samala, mindfulness integration one.
Yeah.
And kind of randomly, I was just like, what do I'm going to listen to? Oh, this looks kind of like it applies to me. But it felt like it really resonated really well. I mean, she talks about her mindfulness practice and meditation practice, and it was like, just like so up my alley. So that was kind of the inspiration, where I was like, oh, this is amazing. Like this, it really was so, it was such a beautiful experience. It was raining. I was running in the rain. I had all these amazing views of the water, and I'm listening to this thing that's just kind of, and like so much energy still going through my body and stuff. And I was like, well, this is really cool. And then I just kind of searched through your podcast to see like if there was, or what more there was on integration. Like, is that because like I had said, it wasn't until I had the experience that I could really get like, oh, integration. Oh, I can see why because there's just so much to unpack, like, from that experience. So I was just kind of searching through, and then I thought, oh, it'd be cool if, you know, if you were actually, if there was something like that where it's like you're actually helping someone with an integration. And then I'm like, why don't I just suggest it to them? So, and then I just sent an email. So that was pretty much it. I didn't put a whole lot of thought into it, but.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, I'm glad you suggested it. I think it's gone very beautifully. And I'm just very pleased that you've been comfortable to do this and to have this conversation. And again, if you change your mind and you don't want it to go out to the public, so, we won't do that. But
so, I mean, I would think we could make it just audio. I don't particularly want to have my face.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
It'll just, this, but
it'll only be audio.
But yeah, I mean, to me that felt like we were just talking about my experience. So it wasn't like I was thinking about, oh, we're recording this or something. So
yeah. Okay, good. So now, just to close, I'd like to ask you if you would be willing to tell the funny story of how it is that we know each other.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's great to see you again.
Yeah.
I believe you gave me a didgeridoo healing or a didgeridoo bath.
Yeah.
I think you were the one that did that, right?
Yeah,
so I can kind of just vaguely remember your face as the guy who was playing the didgeridoo. So we were at Burning Man, and it was a big group of us. I'm pretty sure it was all guys. There might have been one female with us, but maybe like 9 or 10 of us, something like that. And one of them, I guess, had met you, and he came back to us and said, I met this guy, I think he said, like, I met this guy, wrote a book about mushrooms, and he said we should come to his God box. And I'm pretty sure that means he's got some mushrooms in this box, and he's gonna hit us up. And we had also had this idea that we all just wanted to, like, trip together that night at Burning Man as kind of like a friend kind of experience, bonding kind of thing. And I think we had something like maybe 3 grams of mushrooms already, which, you know, we were just like, we can't do this for 9 people. And so we were kind of, all right, let's go check this thing out. And we kept being like, oh, are you sure that's what he meant? Like, I don't know. Not sure, but I mean, he wrote a book about mushrooms. Like, what else could he possibly mean? And so we showed up at this camp, and it's the God Box camp, and the God Box isn't open. And so they're like, it opens at 6, which I guess was you or your friend or something. Someone was like, it opens at 6 or something like that. And we're like, okay, well, we'll wait. Because here we are thinking, like, you know, this, we were definitely like in a kind of a little bit of a desperation vibe, like, oh, we need something. Like, I mean, I don't know why we didn't think we could just have a great night sober and just like partying and see what happens. I mean, so many crazy things have happened at Burning Man that you just kind of bump into the right thing at the right moment anyways. But anyways, we were a little bit in the kind of desperation mode, and we waited. I don't know. It seemed like maybe like an hour or something. We were just sitting in your camp. Just hanging out the whole time being like, are you sure? I don't know, but I think so. And then I think like one of my buddies went first, and he went through the whole God Box experience, and then he kind of comes back, and you can kind of read it on his face.
There's no mushrooms in there.
No, it's not what we thought, you guys. And then we all, I think, had to like sit down and have a real talk, where like it all just, we put it out in the open. We were like, oh, sorry, bro, we thought there was mushrooms here.
Yeah.
And you guys were like, what? Something like that. And so then I think we pretty much split up. I think we might have reunited later in the night, but about half the group just went off and to find some drugs or something, I think, and the rest of us stayed to split up the 3 grams, or that's what we were planning to do. But we went through the God Box experience. And so I had the experience, and I now know what is in the God Box, although it's not a secret anymore. There's a mirror there.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a mirror, not a drug.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was fun. It was a fun, interesting way to start the night. And we definitely still had a great night. But
yeah.
And then I read your book and I was like, I heard, you know, you mentioned the God Box. I'm like, wait, this is the God Box guy? And I was like, what a trip. This is the God Box guy. Okay, sure, whatever. And then I was reading further and you actually tell the story in the book. And I was like, got to relive it. Like, oh, that's what was happening on the other side of that.
So. Yeah, yeah. I love that. I just love that sequence of events and the connections. And I was so delighted when you sent me that original email. And it's like, I was one of those guys that you wrote about at the God Box that was looking for mushrooms. And it's like, oh my God, this is incredible. No one else from the group has read the book, I guess, or you know, made the connection.
I don't think so. I'm only in touch with maybe like half of them still. So
yeah, but that was a real delight to get that email from you. And that was, I mean, that day at the God Box was, as you know, because you read it in the book, that was a pivotal day in my life. I mean, that was literally the turning point in my life that brought me to where I am now that day. And so, and you were there on that day.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
there's something else.
Yeah. And there was like a toad theme to it or something too. Right.
Which is
also weird. Cause I mean, it was also weird for me. Cause like part of this whole thing is that I didn't even know 5-MeO existed until like 4 months ago or something. Or so that's kind of weird for me that like I've been to Burning Man. I was like, you know, inches from you, but like you were on your 5-MeO journey at that point, right?
No, I had not experienced 5-MeO at that point.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is just such a weird trip, but it's like, and then it just comes around full circle like that. So
yeah. So it's beautiful. And here we are. And it's been a great conversation today. And so yeah, thanks for being willing to do this. And
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the one who, you're the one I should be thanking. Yeah.
All right. Well, then you're welcome.
It was a great, I mean, it really was helpful. I think I was a little curious what it would be like, but yeah, I mean, helped kind of like put things into a better perspective that I can kind of make sense of it.
Awesome.
I might have more questions for you.
Yeah. Well, of course, hit me up anytime. And if you have additional experiences that you want help unpacking and reflecting on, you know where to find me.
Okay. Great.
All right. Thanks, Daniel.